You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Wednesday morning to you. Mike McMurray in for a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. And I got all kinds of stuff going on today. I switched in mid-syllable. Almost said I got all kinds of shit going on today. But I went stuff. Yeah, did you notice that? You know, I'm not sympathetic to the president very often, but I find it interesting that, and this is why I want to see the Attorney General's investigation into where did all this stuff come from, right, relative to collusion and all that. Was that an orchestrated political hit that landed and then exploded with the aid of a media that wants it all to be true, right, and doesn't really care about the truth? And then it gets a special prosecutor appointed and all the rest of that stuff. So, what happens if it was all just a political hit job? And so, what happens if the president, wasn't a subject of the investigation, asked the director of the FBI to say that, and he won't say it? Interesting. So what do? Do you just sit there and take it in what you perceive as a political hit now being executed by, you know, the FBI is involved in it, and you know, and again, he's not squeaky clean, right? He's got business interests and what, but let's just say for the sake of argument that Mueller told the truth, right? Everything you've heard about Bob Mueller is that he'll tell the truth, okay? So let's just say that there was no collusion. So Don Trump is going to lay there and allow the people that hate his guts and don't want him to be president and rail against him, to include the media, to have their way. No. So he pushes back. At every step that he could legally push back, right, and some may be questionable, he pushes back. What's wrong with that picture? Why don't I feel like he did something wrong? I think I don't, and again, I'm not a Don Trump guy. I don't particularly care for the dude. I like his policies, but I mean, you know, I think he's doing the right thing with Iran. I think he's doing the right thing, even in Afghanistan, where I think he would love to pull Americans out. He knows that, you know, we can't do that, right? You go to war to win the peace. If you just vacate the premises like President Obama did in Iraq, you get what you get. So, I mean, he, I should think, reluctantly, you know, continues to, you know, stay the course in Afghanistan. And so, and I think the economic confrontation with China, as painful as it may be, the free world has to stand up and tell China, you've got to play by the rules, though. You are not going to tilt this thing upside down. So anyway, So I saw a quote Nancy Pelosi said this is a cover-up, right? No, what I think it is he pushed back against and defended himself against a political hit job that was engineered by the Democratic Party. That's why I don't have, this is like, all of a sudden we want to make it a legal thing when the whole thing is straight, pure politics. Straight, pure politics. So, anyway, that's on my mind. But that's not what's really on my mind. What's on my mind really is that you're going to hear a whole bunch of great radio shows in the next couple weeks. And I'm fired up about it. I'm also fired up about Kantian. I was like in Kantian last night. I wasn't really there, but I mean, I read it. I got the maps out. I was looking at it. And we're going to go there here this morning. Because later on this morning, I'm going to record something about Kantian, you know, a segment of a battlefield study that we're doing on Kantian with a retired Marine Corps gunner, Tim Glennis. So anyway, I'll record that later. So in doing my prep, you know, I get maps out and all the rest of it. And then I start reading. Now, I'm just going to tell you an assignment before you listen to this is just go to the Wikipedia page on Kantian. I know, Mac, really, Wikipedia, blah, 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 blah. Okay, yeah, that. So what I want you to do is just read that. It's just a general understanding of Kantian. Okay, but your jaw will drop, right, when you read about the fighting that went on in the area, in the Kentucky battle space, if you will. That's right. And I'm going to put up a map with this little broadcast here. And I found it, obviously online, but it's in one, you know, those green books they put out about Vietnam? Do you remember those? Okay. They have some cool maps, operational maps. So it shows the areas of operation and the strong point obstacle system as of January 1968. So, and then what I did was I G'd it up a little bit, right? I G'd it up. I made it look pretty. So anyway, I did that and what you have is all the areas of operations. Scotland out west, that included Khe Sanh. And then as you went further to the east, you had, Lancaster, which had the rock pile, Camp Carroll, and a battle space that as it went north, you know, probably a few kilometers west of Kantian up at the DMZ. And then you had the Kentucky battle space. That's right. When you heard you were going to Kentucky, you better have your chin strap buttoned up, because that included Kantian and Camlo, which is further south. And it actually included the Dong Ha combat base because it swung to the west. And then the Napoleon battle space was along the coast and whatnot. So it has and then things that you'll hear about, that you've heard about, if you're not real familiar with the northern end of I Corps, where all these places are, right? The Rock Pile, Camp Carroll, Camlo. Right, Dong Ha Combat Base, Quang Tri Combat Base, and then there's a whole series of outposts. There's Kantian, Jiao Lin, right, and then Dong Ha and Cam Lo. That's what's known as Leatherneck Square. That's right. So, so it's all in there, so it's pretty cool. So I'll throw that map up, and it even shows the completed part. You've heard Bob Nielsen talk about McNamara's line. Right. So what they wound up doing was for, I don't know how many miles. I mean, this is, they cleared a 600 meter wide strip designed to make it difficult for the North Vietnamese army to infiltrate across the DMZ. So, you'll see where that existed, and then you'll see all the strong points and whatnot. So, and then I'm going to go over some of the fighting, that took place there. this morning. So, do I want to do that now? Yeah, I want to do that now. All right. So let me just, before I do that, I put something in front of me so I wouldn't forget. All right. So here's what's going to happen. Programming note. Today, in the second hour, you're going to hear Ben Linick. Ben's been on the program before. He was, he's a retired Marine, medically retired, single amputee below the knee on his right leg, I believe. Might be his left. Can't remember. So Ben was wounded in 2006 in Ramadi as a member of 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines. He recently became a police officer in Colorado, and So he becomes a cop. And so he's, for the first time in his life, he's written something for publication. So he sent me an email, text message a week ago, and he said, "Mac, will you publish this?" I said, "I'll publish anything you write, man." Cause truth be told, Ben is, he's not really enamored with the, well, he is now, I think. He's kind of bitten by it, but he was never previously enamored with the idea of writing. Right, a lot of Marines find writing intimidating. I know I did. I for me it was hard. And so, anywho, so you'll hear Ben in the second hour talking about his career a little bit and his life a little bit, and then what motivated him to write this Memorial Day as it comes up this coming weekend, this Memorial Day weekend. And then we recorded last night, so he's going to actually read what he wrote. And it's a little tough love for veterans who walk in his path as they attempt to put their lives back together, and they struggle. So, yeah, so you'll hear from Ben Linick today. So that's today. Tomorrow, the Lynch and Kenny event will happen. And then on Monday, you're going to hear Battlefield Study. You're going to hear Gunnar Galinas. And you're gonna hear he was at Contien, yeah. So you're gonna hear him talk about Contien, his experience there. So then on Tuesday you're gonna hear the second installment of On Discipline, and that'll be with General Halick. So. He's going to join us, and you'll hear that. Next Wednesday, you're going to hear spouses react to post-traumatic winning. You're going to hear another installment of that, which is very cool. And then we'll round out the week, as we become accustomed to with, Lynch and Kenny, and then the chef. And then the following week, we'll start with, Alex Holling. So, A lot of cool stuff going on. A lot of good programming going on. So, you got that going for you. All right. So I want to talk about Contien. Okay. Contien. So if you look at a map, if you look at Vietnam along the DMZ, right, you're going to find a very crooked line. Essentially, it's the DMZ was, I want to say, a stretch of land that stretched either a mile or 2 miles. I think it was a mile each direction from the Ben Hai River, okay, that runs, through the central part of Vietnam, right? So a mile north and a mile south of that river was considered the demilitarized zone, right? And truth be told, only the United States respected that, and because most of the rest of the world says you can agree to anything with somebody you're fighting, but you don't have to live by it. The United States is a little bit weird like that. So anyway, so that's the DMZ. Contien tucked up right against it on a mountain. Well, I shouldn't say it. It's not a mountain. It's on a high kind of plateau, and Gunnar Galinas will he'll give you a better visual, obviously, than I will. But give me 1 second to open something up. Yes. And it's a high plateau, right? So in Vietnamese, it means the place of angels. So let me just kind of walk you through. And this is what, so in this whole idea of fighting a peer, right? What is that like? Right? It was first a special forces camp. Okay. And then the Marine Corps took it over in hold on, let me get my notes up. Marines take it over in December of 1966. The it becomes, right, one of the anchors of what's known as the McNamara Line, and which runs 15 kilometers from Con Tien to the coast. And ultimately it'll be 600 meters wide. Okay, the border battles begin in February of 1967. Operation Prairie 3, 1-9 moves south of Con Tien along with 3-3. 30 March, a battle study you've already heard, which is Gitlin's Corner. Okay, that happens. And that's southwest also of Con Tien. On April 15th, Charlie Company, the 11th Combat Engineer Battalion, clears a strip from, gets ordered to clear the strip from Jiaolin to, from Con Tien to Jiaolin. Right? They have it half complete, which is bulldozing this stuff. They have it half complete, by about the 20th of April. Yeah, pretty good progress. And then they widen it. On the 8th of May, 1968, the one of the infamous days in Con Tien history, and that is an attack on Con Tien. The NV attack Delta Company, 1st Battalion, 4th Marines, and essentially overrun Delta 1-4. When the dust settles, 197 North Vietnamese killed, 8 captured, no idea how many wounded. Marine Corps, 44 KIA, 110 wounded in action. That's essentially the entire company. After that, General Westmoreland lists the sanctuary title that's been given to the DMZ. From May 18th to May 26th, you have Operations Hickory, Lam Son, Bow Charger, and Belt Tight. They include 226, 29, 34. And I'll give you some casualty numbers and all of this, and it's like, oh shit, that's what fighting a peer is about. Yeah. Operation Prairie Fort, which was a sweep of the area southwest of Con Tien. Okay. 505 NVA killed. Marine Corps, 164 Marines killed, 1,240 Marines wounded, Operation Prairie 4. So those are the kind of numbers that you're talking about when you're talking about fighting a peer. Operation Buffalo, which is a movement to contact the single greatest loss of life during the war in Vietnam in a single day. 86 Marines killed in action. Alpha Company and Bravo Company 1-9 sweep north from Con Tien into the DMZ. total for the operation, 159 Marines killed, 345 wounded. 1,290 North Vietnamese bodies are found. Let me say that again. This is Operation Buffalo. Right? Worst single day of fighting. This is Alpha and Bravo Company 1-9. 86 Marines killed. From, this was, I want to say the first day was 2nd of July 1967 to 14 July 1967. Again, a movement to contact in the DMZ. 86 Marines killed in a single day, 159 during the operation, 345 wounded. Actually, the number of wounded surprises me. I expected it to be much more. And again, 1,290 North Vietnamese killed in action during a 12-day period. Next is Operation Hickory, essentially a continuation. 14 to 16th July, 39 NVA soldiers killed, 4 Marines killed, 90 Marines wounded. Operation Kentucky, okay, 1 November until 28 February 1968, which moves into Tet, right? During that period of time, 520 Marines killed in action, 2,698 wounded in action. This is Con Thien, right? I mean, amazing. So when Tet happens, there's no great push, right? There's none of that. It's just the same fighting that they've been doing, right? They continue to do. Now, I just want to let me just read you some stuff I've highlighted. In September of 1967, the North Vietnamese started their major shelling of the base, hitting it with at least 200 artillery and mortar rounds daily, peaking on 25 September when a reported 1,200 rounds hit the base. From 19 to 27 September of 1967, more than 3,000 rounds hit the base. In response, Marine artillery fired 12,577 rounds. Navy ships fired 6,148 rounds, and more than 5,200 Marine and Air Force sorties hit North Vietnamese positions. Battalions rotated out of Con Thien every day. All right, in January 1968, with pressure increasing on the Khe Sanh combat base along Route 9, so, Route 1 goes up the coast, right? Route 9 heads inland, and it runs south of Con Thien, right? So, you hear things like Camp Carroll, Cam Lo, and then it heads out to the rock pile. Yeah, I'm almost getting fluent in Vietnam. The rock pile, and then it turns kind of south and it bends towards Khe Sanh, right? So 1-9, just in case it didn't get enough up in the Kentucky battle space, got sent to Khe Sanh. 3-4 then expanded to the west to take over battle space. 2-4 was inserted to the east of Con Thien. In March, Lima Company 3-3 occupying an outpost on Hill 28 just north of the A3 position. So if you look at your map, A3 is, I don't know how many clicks west of Con Thien, maybe about halfway between Con Thien and GL Linh, which is near the coast. All right. Occupying an outpost on Hill 28, right north of A3, intercepted a North Vietnamese battalion attempting to infiltrate the position. The North Vietnamese encircled the Marines, you heard that right, and only when the Marines backed by airstrikes and Huey gunships did they cease. One Marine was killed, 13 wounded, while killing over 100 North Vietnamese soldiers. On 16 March, my company 3-3, Charlie Company 1-4, clashed with another battalion-sized North Vietnamese force. Two Marines were killed. Artillery was called in and shot 400 rounds. North Vietnamese left 83 bodies, four Marines killed in action. For the entire month, March of 1968, 9th Marines reported over 400 enemy dead, while Marine casualties were 37 KIA, 200 wounded in action. That's the 9th Marine Regiment, okay? So listen to some, I just want to go through some of these fights, because they're stunning when in light of, you're going to talk about fighting a peer. So let me just clip through these. On 22 May, a patrol from Alpha Company, 1st Battalion, 4th Marines, ran into a North Vietnamese force east of Con Tien. The Marines attacked from the east, while 3-3 moved west from a strong point. Other Marines from 3-9 were helicoptered into a blocking position. The North Vietnamese tried to escape the cordon that was being set across the trace line, right? So that's the plowed area. Were mowed down by artillery tanks, helicopter gunships, and fixed-wing air. North Vietnamese suffered 225 KIA, while the Marines had 23 KIA, 75 wounded. That's on 22 May. On 6 June, reinforced platoon from Echo 226 observed the enemy engage. Observed and then engaged a North Vietnamese company while on patrol 1.8 kilometers southeast of Con Tien. 14 North Vietnamese soldiers were killed, 14 Marines were killed, and 11 wounded. On 7 July 1968, 9th Marines began a sweep of the area between Con Tien and the DMZ, so they're going north. On 11 July, 4 kilometers northeast of Con Tien, listen to this, elements of 3-9 discovered a reinforced North Vietnamese platoon in the open. Fixing them in place with small arms fired, Marines then fired artillery and called in air and used tank support to kill more than 30 North Vietnamese soldiers. 9th Marines uncovered and destroyed numerous North Vietnamese fortifications. One bunker system discovered 4 kilometers due north of Con Tien spanned more than a kilometer, included 442 well-constructed bunkers. Supplies and equipment abandoned included 934 mortar rounds, 500 pounds of explosives, 55 anti-tank mines, 500 pounds of rice. Marines also found 29 NVA bodies killed by the airstrikes. Yeah, amazing, right? And so this is what a peer does. This is my point in talking about this stuff. And then you can also link it to the discipline. You're going to be undisciplined, and you're going to go do this, you're going to get your head kicked in. 21 July, 2-9 discovered a North Vietnamese bunker complex 6 kilometers southwest of Con Tien. So they're past Con Tien. They've gone past Con Tien to set up this bunker complex. Now listen to the size of the bunker complex. Composed of 60 in your Arabic numeral system. A-frame timbered bunkers built into the sides of bomb craters, right? So disguised in bomb craters, each with an average overhead cover of 10 feet thick. 10 feet thick. The system was connected to a large command bunker by a network of interconnecting tunnels. The command bunker featured an aperture overlooking Con Tien and the C2 position. Documents found in the bunker indicated that the North Vietnamese had been observing and reporting movements of helicopters, tanks, and trucks entering Con Tien and C2. It's amazing. No, I mean, it reads, you read it, and you're like, yeah, we haven't fought like this in a while. So after Tet, after the initial, you know, after Tet, activity in the area dies down for a while. Okay, so in August, in addition to sightings of enemy tanks, Marine fighter pilots and aerial observers reported spotting trucks, truck parks, and camouflage revetments, storage bunker, and trench lines. Of special interest were repeated sightings of low, slow-moving lights during the hours of darkness. It was assumed came from enemy helicopters thought to be resupplying forward positions with high-priority cargo such as ammunition, medical supplies, or conducting medevac. So listen to what we did. All right. On 19 August, after 60 arc light airstrikes, those are B-52s, right? 2nd Battalion 1st Marine assaulted into three LZs in the southern part of the DMZ, 5 kilometers north of Cantien. 60 B-52s. Hello. And ultimately, they didn't find a whole lot. Yeah, those helicopter pilots, those fighter pilots, right? Not seeing the right shit. So that's kind of, and then on 28 October, Marines are relieved there by in the Kentucky battle space. On 31 August of 1968, Marines were relieved of the responsibility of the Kentucky area of operations by the Army's 1st Brigade, 5th Infantry Division, mechanized, who took over. On 22 October, General Abrams ordered all construction and planning efforts associated with the anti-infiltration effort halted. That's the McNamara line. Under new plans referred to as dual blade, Allied forces supported by air, artillery, and naval gunfire would maintain a mobile posture and actively resist infiltration from the north by maintaining a comprehensive surveillance effort, which included sensors and aviation support and all the rest of it. Right. And activity, right, in the area slows down, right? And so the number of major fights. But so when we talk about fighting a pier, fighting a near pier, right, you see that effort? Building bunkers that can observe you into the sides of the craters that you've created with 10 feet of overhead cover, right? 4 kilometers of trench line, you know, four clicks north of you with 242 bunkers. So, I mean, you read, and I'm just scratching the surface content, so you'll hear on Monday Gunnar Glenis and his thoughts as a young Marine. And he and I were talking. He said, it sucked, man. You went there. You were a replacement. You didn't know anybody. You didn't go there as a unit. Guys you knew, they went home on leave. You didn't know anybody. Guys that you, you will obviously find what he has to say interesting. So, yeah, when you read it, Cantien is jaw-dropping fighting. And so, good morning to you. I thought I'd share that with you. So, interesting stuff coming up. Ben Lunick, you'll hear from at the top of the hour. Don't miss that. He's medically retired as a corporal, wounded as a lance corporal, lost his leg. And then, he will tell you that, he scuffled in his life, scuffled with alcohol, scuffled with isolation, and he has turned his life around. And he's got a message, and he felt so strongly about it for the first time in his life, he wrote something. So, you'll see that piece written, in you'll see it, the written version with the post today, and you'll hear him read it in about half hour after we kind of set it up. So, good morning to you. Kantian in my head. Battlefield study. We'll do a series of them. Because, again, what it's linked to is the whole issue of discipline. Right? You better have your ass and your brain wired together if you're going to fight like that. Because somebody will take it to you. I mean, you look at the Marine casualties. We haven't suffered casualties like that, with the exception of Beirut, since Vietnam. Right? The Army had a rough day in Somalia, but what would be the bloodiest day in Iraq or Afghanistan? Did it break double digits for any unit? I don't think so. I don't think so. That'd be an interesting question to ask ourselves. But that's not the way near peer war is. You better have your shit together. So anyway, interesting as those two issues kind of intersect. So, good morning to you. United States Marine Corps Band makes this day official. Dedicated to today's guest, Ben Lunick. I've known him since he was I knew his dad, who served on the city council in Grand Forks, North Dakota. So his dad used to be a guest on my program, and when I met Ben, you'll hear us talk about it. But I saw the name, and I said, "Are you any relation to?" And so our lives continue to cross and intersect. And I can't say how proud I am of being able to call him my friend. He's a great example of what it is to fight and struggle and to not quit and to find a good place. And now, even better, he's not done, right? He continues to give. So, this is dedicated to Corporal Ben Lunick, United States Marine Corps, retired, a proud member of 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines, and a veteran of the war in Iraq, and one of my favorite guests to have on this program. So dedicated to Ben Lunick.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
President speaking in the Rose Garden, I think. He lives by the motto that if you don't answer it, then people think it's true. So evidently, Speaker Pelosi accused him of a cover up. And again, I do not follow this. Probably like I should. So again, the problem I have with this is, in my opinion, when the Attorney General comes out with what he comes out with and says, okay, this is what really happened. Okay, you had these people generated this. This person paid for it. This person paid for it. This person leaked it to this person. This person blew it up. None of it was true, right? Or whatever. And then you're going to see, you know, you're going to see the whole house of lies that gets perpetuated by both parties. It's not about the truth. It's only about playing a game of chicken for the White House. And it's pathetic. It's beneath the American people, but that is our political system. The truth doesn't matter. The media is in on it. Money trumps all. It's disgusting. Right? But anyway, not to be sidetracked on that, that is simply the way it is. Cloudy and 69 in Quantico, Virginia. It is mostly cloudy and 78 at Camp Lejeune. It is cloudy and 59, so cool here in Southern California, and is that way out in the desert. Cloudy and 59 in 29 Palms. Cloudy and 57 at Camp Pendleton. It is at Camp Smith in Hawaii. Dark, cloudy and 77. Okinawa, cooler yet. Dark, clear in 69, so Okinawa's cooled off a little bit. In the Al-Anbar province of Iraq, it is sunny and 96 degrees late in the afternoon there. So a pretty normal day. In the Helmand province of Afghanistan, a little bit cooler. It is 81 degrees under clear skies there. And at the home of All Marine Radio, it is 59 degrees. Looking for a high today of 66 degrees with lightning and rainstorms today. That's right. We're like Minneapolis all of a sudden. Go figure. All right, we'll take a break. We'll check news headlines. Headed for Ben Lunick at the top of the hour. The first article he's ever written for publication. He thought it was important that he share some of his thoughts with other veterans that are going through things that he's gone through. And a little bit of tough love. I'll warn you in advance. So don't touch that dial. We'll check news headlines real quick as we leave Contien and we head towards news headlines and then Ben Lunick here on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Matt.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, Thank you.
I'm good. But I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, we'll check some news headlines here. All right, let's see. Marine Harrier crash, pilot ejected. Crash near Havelock, North Carolina on Monday. Pilot ejected safely from the aircraft, according to Marine Corps officials. This is the second Harrier that's crashed in North Carolina in how many months? Peyton Davis right there, just so you know who that is. Pilot is being taken to East Carolina East Medical Center in New Bern, North Carolina. There are currently no reports of civilian casualties or property damage. The Havelock Sheriff Department responded to the incident and were later supported by personnel from the 2nd Marine Aircraft Wing. The command released in details that the command released. So the crash had been cordoned off, incident under investigation. Harrier belonged to the 2nd Marine Air Wing out of Cherry Point, North Carolina. No further additional details were available, and unlike the last time one of these crashed, no pictures available of it either. Yesterday, the Acting Secretary of Defense, Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, both went up to Capitol Hill and briefed Congress. Top Trump administration officials told Congress that recent actions by the U.S. have deterred Iranian attacks on American forces, but some lawmakers remain deeply skeptical of the White House approach to the Middle East. After Tuesday's closed-door briefing on Capitol Hill, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Acting Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan, said their objective over recent days has been to deter Iran. Shanahan said, quote, "We're not about going to war." He said the administration's goal is to prevent Iranian miscalculation, adding, "We do not want the situation to escalate." Democrats are particularly concerned the administration may try to rely on a nearly 20-year-old war authorization rather than seek fresh approval from Congress for any action. Shanahan was quoted during the brief saying, the brief was a closed-door brief yesterday. The Pentagon was receiving credible intelligence about threats to our interests in the Middle East and to American forces. This is about deterrence, not about war. But at no point does anybody reveal any further either information about it, other than, again, we've heard that it's missiles, we've heard a variety of things. So, anyway, whatever it was enough to cause the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to tell the Lincoln to kick it into gear. And the Kearsarge, now I'm intimidated to say that again, you know, it's a little bit different Mew when it's got F-35s embarked, right, instead of the Harrier. Yeah, it's no shit. Again, the Harrier, I mean, I'm not saying this because it crashed, but the biggest problem with the Harrier, I mean, we advertise it's going to be forward, you know, based and all that bullshit. It gives a jet presence to the Muse, and that's probably a good thing. But they're very limited in their capability because of the amount of fuel they use. Headline. This is a interesting little commentary piece. Victory begins with doing the right thing in garrison, this Marine Master Guns says. It's an article written by Master Gunnery Sergeant Scott Stalker. So who is Scott Stalker? He is a command senior enlisted leader for the National Security Agency and the U.S. Cyber Command. Whoops. So anyway, the following opinion piece does not necessarily reflect the views of Marine Corps Times. At this point, you'd have to have been on another planet to not at least have heard of the policy letter by the commanding general of the 2nd Marine Division, Major General David Furness. You also probably have heard the reaction of many Marines and anonymous individuals. While I am not a current member of the 2nd Marine Division, I also have some thoughts on the topic. It's important to understand the context behind this policy. The theme is attention to detail, accountability, and discipline. Why? Why is it important for us as Marines or those in the Joint Force to be accountable for our actions and to have the self-discipline our leaders demand? Question mark. The current national security strategy recognizes a return of great power competition, stating that China and Russia are fielding military capabilities designed to deny America access in times of crisis and to contest our ability to operate freely in critical commercial zones during peacetime. What this means for us is an operating environment where information operations, cyberspace, and the electromagnetic spectrum are all contested, where the ability to share information and communicate between echelons of command will often be degraded, if function at all. What both leaders and the NSS calls for is a focus, I skipped a few paragraphs, on the discipline necessary for conflict with a peer adversary. And I read some of it this morning, right, relative to Kantian. It's no shit. In a degraded environment where units may be decimated, our junior enlisted and company grade officers will lead the fight. They will not have the luxury of clear communications with higher headquarters. They will have to execute based on the intent they were given, and demonstrate the discipline and inspirational leadership necessary to go on when all signs point to retreating. Then he kind of gives some personal examples of wearing flip-flops. We all joined the Marine Corps for many different reasons, but none of which was to lower the standard or blemish our history. What Major General Furness is asking us is nothing we didn't already sign up for. Basic customs and courtesies, a professional appearance, and to be that, quote, worthy successor of our 13th Commandant, General John Lejeune. What he asks of us in his birthday message. He closes with this. The Super Bowl champion coach Vince Lombardi was once asked what it took to be number one. He said, winning is not a sometimes thing. It is an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while. You don't do things once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit. Unfortunately, so is losing. For us, victory comes at a cost, and it begins with doing the right thing in garrison. While the anonymous hero and social media expert will continue to flex faceless muscles while mocking our call to standards, let's take this policy letter as a call to get back to the brilliance at the basics, to empower NCOs to lead and set the standard of excellence. The operating environment of the future may call for it. Our Corps deserves it. Our nation demands it. And the Marines on the left and right of us rely on it. That's Master Gunnery Sergeant Scott H. Stalker, Command's Senior Enlisted Leader for the National Security Agencies and the United States Cyber Command. To that end, the second installment on Discipline is going to happen next week, and that will be done by retired Marine Corps Lieutenant General Dennis Halick. And so looking forward to doing that. Looking forward to doing that. He and I have crossed paths a couple times. I don't know him well, but All Marine Radio would not exist were it not for General Halick and General Neller, because I would never come back on active duty. The resulting experience, which you know compelled me to do this, would have never happened. So I'm looking forward to do it, to hearing. And let me just tell you, I love the discussions that we have in that thing. I mean, it's kind of a liberal arts discussion about their career, how they encountered it, and their conclusions relative to it. So anyway, a couple more top five stories in Early Bird. We'll look at three of them. Why the Air Force is investigating a cyber attack from the Navy. The Air Force is investigating the Navy for a cyber intrusion into its network, according to a memo obtained by Military Times. The bizarre turn of events stems from a decision by a Navy prosecutor to embed hidden tracking software into emails sent to defense attorneys, including one Air Force lawyer involved in a high-profile war crime of a Navy SEAL in San Diego. The tracking device was an attempt to find out who was leaking information to the editor of Navy Times, a sister publication. A similar tracking device was also sent to Carl Prine, the Navy Times editor who has written numerous stories about the case. So there you have it. So the Air Force investigating the Navy. Nice. Next story, Trump taps Barbara Barrett, former Aerospace Corporation chairwoman, as next Secretary of the Air Force. Now, made the announcement yesterday. Who is she? Current Secretary and outgoing Secretary, Heather Wilson, said in a tweet that Barrett was a wonderful choice by the president. Senator Martha McSally, Republican from Arizona, applauded Barrett's choice in a news release yesterday. Quote, Ambassador Barrett is a force to be reckoned with and who has leadership experience and knowledge to lead our Air Force into the future during a time of increased global threats, McSally said in a press release. So that in the news. One more story in the top five, the other two. This is, again, about the threat from Iran is on hold. Quote from Acting Secretary Shanahan, I think our steps were very prudent, and we put on hold the potential for attacks on Americans, and that is what is extremely important, Shanahan told reporters outside of the Pentagon. Quote, we're in a period where the threat remains high, and our job is to make sure that there is no miscalculations by the Iranians. Later asked to clarify whether he meant the threat from Iran was diminished or reduced, Shanahan replied, there haven't been any attacks on Americans. I would consider that on hold. He went on to add, our prudent response, I think, has given the Iranians time to recalculate. I think our response was a measure of our will and resolve that we will protect our people and our interests in the region. How about this, right? If I think that the nations, our coalition ought to say, look, we're not going to attack Iranian forces in Syria or anyplace else. We're gonna make Iran hurt, right? We're not gonna go chase your, well, we will chase your proxies and kill them, but we're gonna make it hurt in your country. You cannot sponsor this shit all over the world with your forces and not expect it to come home for you, so we're gonna make it hurt. Top stories in Navy Times before we take a break and you hear Ben Lunick. This is the number one story. With all the shit going on in the world, this is the number one story. This is like the thing about social media and where we are that blows me away. The top story with, you know, war, possibly with Iran, new sector of the Air Force, the top story in Stars and Stripes is five sailors at Joint Base San Antonio, Lackland, charged with sexual assault of a woman.
That's the top story.
One story that I do want to get to in Stars and Stripes that has a Marine twist to it, it has to do with the Medal of Honor for a Marine being returned to and you have to give me a second because Stars and Stripes blocks me on one browser. Dateline is Camp Foster, Okinawa, published yesterday. A Pennsylvania nonprofit organization dedicated to educating Americans about citizenship and community service has fulfilled a family's wishes and shipped a Marine Heroes Medal of Honor home for display. The medal, earned by Major Henry Courtney, Jr., on the bloody slopes of Okinawa's Sugarloaf Hill, arrived in Courtney's hometown of Duluth, Minnesota, by secure courier shortly before it was announced on May 15th, according to a statement by the St. Louis County Historical Society and members of Courtney's family. The Society's Veterans Memorial Hall Museum will house the award. The medal was loaned to the Society by the Valley Forge-based Freedoms Foundation following a request by Courtney's descendants. The medal for now is in a secure vault. Courtney's nephew, Court Story, who was named for the Medal of Honor recipient, wrote in an email to Stars and Stripes. An installation ceremony and public reception is scheduled for May 29th, this Memorial Day, to celebrate, to officially place the medal in the museum gallery. Quote, our family is very pleased, Story said. We are pleased and gratified that the Freedoms Foundation has worked with us to allow the Courtney Medal of Honor to return to be displayed in Henry Courtney's hometown of Duluth, where he was born and raised, where his family lived and was part of the community for more than a half a century, where he and his parents are buried, and where his story will continue to be told. He was awarded the medal posthumously after leading a daring assault on Sugarloaf Hill on the night of May 14th, 1945, telling his Marines, I'm going up Sugarloaf Hill. Who's going with me? Every man in his charge rose and followed. An attorney before the war and a Marine reservist, he was killed by Japanese mortar fire after a vicious close-quarters fight, but not before his Marines inflicted heavy casualties, which ultimately led to the taking of the strategic position days later. The medal was accepted by Courtney's parents on December 30, 1947. It remained under the care of Courtney's family until 1980, when it was gifted to the Freedoms Foundation by his sister Elizabeth Bean under the condition that Courtney's story be told in a meaningful way. The family later discovered the foundation had no display honoring Courtney, his story was not being discussed, and his medal was kept locked away in a vault with several others. So the rest of the story is the fight to get the medal back and then to appropriately display it in Duluth, Minnesota, his hometown. So well done, well done. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear Ben Lunick here on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. You're going to hear Ben has written for the first time. And he wrote being compelled to write after losing a leg in Ramadi in 2006, all these years later, he's encouraging veterans with what he writes. Now, it's a bit of a wire brush, I'm going to warn you about that, but you'll enjoy for those of you who've never heard Ben, you'll enjoy a little bit of a refresher course and why he wrote this. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on a Wednesday edition right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.